This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonslow, and I stole the booth at ASTA again. ASTA 25 in Raleigh, North Carolina. Cheap up. So, I have a guest. I'll introduce him after a word from our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Do you have a general service tech that you want to grow into your business, but you're lacking the path to get them there? Let Napa Auto Tech's apprentice program pave the way. Go to NapaAutoTech.com for more details. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? Picoscope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. My guest, who I apprehended from a class with Keith Perkins, where he would have probably learned a lot. So I need you to have some sympathy for this gentleman. And I mean that sincerely. Mike Molesky of PSK Automotive has joined me. And we're starting off talking about trying to use our podcast voice.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
You got a really good podcast voice.
Mm-hmm.
You got to bring it down.
Bring it down.
Bring it down.
Good evening.
I've read that a lot of male voices have risen in pitch because of responses to their mothers, and not because they're mimicking that tone, but they're told to speak up. So they tighten up their chests and the pitch goes up.
That's interesting, because when I get louder, I get lower.
Right. Same.
My dad voice.
Yeah, me too. Or when I answer the phone, like I'll talk like this and then the phone will ring and I'll go, hello.
Mm-hmm. So I'll talk to you like this and then the shop phone rings. PSK Auto, this is Mike. How can I help you? They don't even recognize
me. They think you hired Barry White.
I can't help it. It's autonomic. It just happens.
Same. Yeah, I guess when I try to talk and have people hear me, I think the pitch goes up. Mm-hmm. I think I throat tightens up and all the bad things. That's probably why if I do presentations, it just destroys my voice.
Yeah, I realize, because I also teach at a technical college, and I have found throughout my class, I drink like 3 bottles of water an hour because I'm constantly talking, never stopping, and then chugging water at the same time to save my voice.
Oh, he lived. It's all right.
Jimmy.
Jimmy Lee, putting on a show. If only you could see his coat.
Is that salmon?
See, I only recognize like 16 colors.
And red, salmon yellow. Is one.
No, it is now. Now I'm 17. I'm you up to 17.
Consider that coral, maybe.
Yeah, I recently added fuchsia.
Is that a blue?
I think it's like pinkish purplish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, it's not my repertoire of colors.
Actually, not to go down the physics rabbit hole, but it doesn't technically exist.
Whoa.
It's our, yeah.
Our minds make it up.
Yep.
Because
like reality.
The eyes send it to the brain, but the brain doesn't compute.
No. Yeah. Just sensory overload. So what class did I steal you from?
Keys and Immobilizer.
From Keith Perkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a great instructor.
Yeah. He's one of the good ones, especially in that topic. Actually, he can rattle off a lot of stuff in a lot of different topics. I'm slightly envious.
Yeah. He's good, but he's also quite sarcastic too, which is entertaining.
Right.
Yeah. It's up my alleyway. So I always enjoy sitting in on a class of his. Yeah.
So you've been into keys, or are you getting into keys?
I have been into keys for about 2.5, maybe close to 3 years now.
Yeah.
I think it was potentially like a vision class or something that triggered this interest. And then I went down a rabbit hole, hyperfixation, all the YouTube videos, pricing, yeah. Looking up what's my ROI going to be. And I said, holy cow, the margins in keys are fantastic. Why would I not do this?
Do you remember the class at Vision, which one it was or who did it?
I don't.
I got into keys because I got very frustrated with shops wanting programming of new body controller, really theft related, if you will, or immobilizer related modules on Fords.
Sure. I totally get that. Like, I've always tried to take care of whatever I could in-house, right? Yeah. The programming, sure, key stuff every now and then came up, but I didn't realize I wanted that to be a focal point of my business. It was really the money that drew me to it. And I hate to say it, I already had some capability, but when it came to cutting, right, especially like high security keys, yep, I was like, I have to call someone. And I happen to be blessed with having a Toyota specialist, PJ Walter, lives in the same area that my shop is. And he's mobile doing keys, ADOS programming, etc. So I would call him to come and cut some keys for me. He would have to program some. I could take care of some. But that really snowballed into me pushing it and focusing on it more. And if I could go back to 13 years ago when I started my business initially, I wish I had thrown myself into keys.
Yeah, that's same. It's like many of the topics when it comes to shop management and or service offerings and all that, I struggle to have any kind of a authoritative voice on it because I just feel like a lot of what I get away with doing and the capability we can offer is geographical in nature and also proximity. And I don't mean just proxy keys. No pun. Does that count as a pun? It should.
It should.
If it isn't, it should.
It's an automotive dad joke.
That's all I got. And the competition was, there's two locksmiths in town and they're getting close to retirement age. Their bread and butter is more commercial residential. They hate cars. They didn't hate cars back in the day when they're just metal keys and, you know, no transponders,
sure,
no immobilizer system. But then with onset of immobilizer and then the just different levels of it and different ways different car manufacturers handle adding of keys, they just didn't want to make the equipment investment. They didn't want to make the educational investment, the inventory investment, just all of the things. When I was thinking about getting into it, I was just trying to do the right thing and try to be respectful. So I call them both independently and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting into key cutting and programming. Both of them, again, independently. Are you going to do anything more than cars? It's like, I have no interest in anything outside of cars. They're like, perfect.
The gatekeeping is real in the locksmithing industry.
Yep.
Tommy Oliva told me about this when I first started, you know, asking questions. He's like, watch out. No one's going to want to help you. He's like, call me if you need me, you know, like he is.
Yep. Yep.
But boy, that industry is mean. And I see why, you know, they're doing the whole, we're the locksmiths. Now all the mechanics want to get in on our bread and butter. Yep. Right. And now what are all of the locksmiths asking? How do I get into module programming, yep, right?
Yeah, because their hands are being forced into that. One, they need to have more services to offer. But two, a lot of what they're doing involves programming. Or it's just a couple different button pushes and then they're programming anyways with the same software if they're doing stuff with a OE.
Sure, yeah.
You know, factory scan tool type programs or softwares. And a lot of them have quite the collection of factory scan tools for the purpose of a mobilizer, but they're just right there for the programming now. And they're already mobile. So in some cases, depending on the market, they're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And then in others, they're behind it. So I just lucked out that they're kind of like, not only do you have our blessing, we are going to send you people.
A rising tide raises all ships, right?
Right.
That's awesome. In my area, I was met with another obstacle. In Pittsburgh, PA, there is a dealership for almost every manufacturer within 10 miles.
Wow.
From Lotus, yeah, to Maserati to Honda, right? There's everything within a drive.
Yeah.
So the competition is real in terms of the dealer can do it. And when we think of like German companies that have, you know, pre-programmed keys, you can just go and purchase and you're ready to roll. That presents some challenges, of course, right?
Yep.
So now you're picking and choosing what vehicles can you really get a good grasp on in your market. You know, the Hondas, Fords, like, for example, we know what's going on with Ford lately being pulled, or all keys loss functions being pulled from some of the aftermarket scan tools, yep, due to some discrepancies in contracts. So I've heard.
Yeah, I think contracts, I think how certain companies, we won't name names, I think those that know how they got that data. A lot of those bigger companies, right, they start getting involved with the manufacturers. Legitimately.
Yeah, good point.
That's a big deal for, yeah, them to preserve. So now, you know, if a large entity like Ford or Toyota is kind of like, hey, you know what? We don't like this feature so much. They're going to pull it.
Yes, master.
Yeah. it's a lot of money involved.
Yeah, for sure.
And future relationships involved. So I don't, it is what it is.
Preservation is key. Yeah. No, you're right.
And luckily it's those, and there's alternatives that work and all that. But,
and you know, I was mad about the gatekeeping in the beginning, but now, you know, as a VSP, I think about, you know what? Yeah, I don't like that anyone with a $400 red tool can take my customer base. So yeah, now I've switched teams.
Advertising on Facebook Marketplace, they're programming keys for $50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So they gave me their blessing. They're giving me referrals. They selling whatever tools and equipment and inventory to me cheap. So my key inventory exploded because they were dumping theirs.
There's so many keys. There are so many keys.
So like Scan Tools, I will tell you, and key programmers, keys themselves, you will have amazingly large inventory and you will never have the right one.
Never. For anyone that's listening that doesn't do keys, you know, you can have a key that looks exactly the same on the outside and you can have 10 of them and they could all be different. Think about that.
Yeah. Different FCCs, different chip IDs.
Yeah. That's right. You could have a couple hundred keys, yet that customer's car. Nope. Sorry. Got to order it.
Yep. And then you order like more so you can keep filling up that inventory.
You never see that again.
Oh man, if it was fruit, you'd be throwing it all out.
For sure.
But I don't know. Then there's that rush, that euphoric rush of Friday afternoon. Somebody's like, oh my God, I lost all my keys and I got to go somewhere. And you have the keys.
Mm-hmm. Come out on top, beat your chest a little bit. I'm the hero for the day.
Yeah, it's kind of like that YouTube short or maybe it's a Facebook reel of that dad, you know, maybe he's in his 60s and they need this one piece of wood for the deck. And he does like a big light bulb goes off over his head and he just hauls ass down into the basement and finds it. And then they're all high-fiving.
It's been there for 7 years thinking that one day he might need it.
Yep. That's how it is at the shop with the keys. Just the service advisors, the other techs don't know what's going on, but they got to get in on it. High fives. Celebratory.
Everything's in slow motion. I'm seeing this in my head.
Right. Yeah, this is all playing out.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. AutoTech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. AutoTech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the AutoTech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. AutoTech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Auto Tech Training. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com.
How capable were the dealers around you for keys?
They were capable. Everyone was able to make it happen.
When we first got into it, the first key cutting machine I had was a Dolphin that I got from Isaac. I don't know how the word got out. I think I just mentioned it in passing to one of the, like the parts manager for one of the dealers. Because where the shop is, more importantly, there's three dealers, GM, Ford, Chrysler. There's no other dealer support for miles and miles. Just in casual conversation, mentioned that we got a key cutting machine and I've been doing the laser cut keys, high security keys. For the better part of 3 years, we got all their key cutting. So they would send over a key with the key code. I would cut it, send it back, and they'd do all the programming and everything. Sure. And then if they had a used car that they wanted to, that they sold and wanted to add a key or something, they'd just send the car over.
I love that. I do the same thing. There's a dealership about, I don't know, maybe a half a mile down the road. I cut every single one of their keys for them.
Yeah.
It's great business, right? We have a good relationship. You know, it just helps with that return on the investment. I also have the Dolphin, the 005,
yep,
right?
Yep.
It's paid for itself over and over and over again. And so that particular dealership group brings me keys from multiple different manufacturers. And I'll take them off and I'll never bite the hand that feeds. And one day they start asking me about key machines, I'm going to try to scare them away.
Now I have a Triton. I love that thing.
I've heard good things.
I love that thing. And I also like the price tag on it because when you know the ROI is, it's a no-brainer to get it.
Yep.
But if you're kind of on the fence, it's a deterrent. And I like that because if you're not serious.
Sure, they're scared to get into
right.
it. For sure. And then I just learned this from Keith today. I didn't realize that Triton has U.S. tech support.
Yes.
Which is a big deal.
Huge deal. It's good tech support and they're friendly and the tool is... I've noticed, so I've had the Triton now a couple of years, 3 years, and the last year or so, the updates they've been doing have been flying. I don't know. I guess that's always made me feel good that tools are regularly updated, meaning continually trying to improve it. Maybe it's a bug fix. Maybe it's adding more coverage. Maybe it's adding better coverage. Certain keys like Tibby keys, maybe it's a little more handholding. Tibby keys are the tubular style.
Correct.
Jaguar.
They're my kryptonite. I don't do them. They have defeated me and I quit.
Oh, man. The Triton has been good to me. It's been very good to me. It seems like I did one on a Dolphin, though, but I'm trying to remember. I thought it went okay. Maybe not. I might have had the key code for it.
The key code and that. Don't they have a specific clamp
you got to use? Yeah, you got to use the right jaw and the whole bit. Yeah. So I had bought that separate with the Triton. It does. It walks you through it. I can't complain.
I traded that jaw for a dinner at Applebee's. To be transparent.
Yeah. Just to be out of it. We don't get them that often. But if anybody around us is going to get a Jaguar, it's us. Nobody else is going to work on it. I mean, they'll change oil, maybe do some brakes.
Right.
But once it gets into anything beyond that, you've got to plug a scan tool in it. They're out sending it to Riverside. And then, of course, keys. Yeah, it's the only game in town.
So where you are, would you consider yourself the one-stop shop? We fix it all?
Yeah, I think we don't do anything with collision type stuff, at least with the body work itself. We have a relationship with the collision shop, so we do collision-related ADOS and
sure.
diagnostics programming and all that. But I'm trying to think what we don't do. I guess we don't rebuild transmissions in-house. We don't really rebuild engines except maybe some Subarus, right? Because what's the alternative?
That barely counts. You buy right. a loaded short block and you put cylinder heads on it.
Exactly. I would say, yeah, there isn't much we don't do.
Nice.
I don't know if it's smart, but we just are too dumb to say no sometimes.
That train of thought is what made me stop trying to be everyone's hero with my first shop, which was a European specialty shop. We tried to do everything for everybody, and I realized that wasn't efficient. And it wasn't making money, right? And sometimes I would let my ego get in the way. Yep. I want to be the one that fixes it. You know, it's like when you get caught down the rabbit hole of a diag for 7 hours and you know you're only going to maybe get 2 hours max out of it because you have to be right. You have to solve yep. the mystery.
Yep.
That would catch me on a lot of new projects and I stopped. So this general repair shop that I have now, I say no more than I say yes. And there's a lot of things I don't do.
Nice.
And especially body work. I can't even color inside the line, let alone do body work. Man. I'm going to be honest. So
They're artists.
They are.
They are artists.
They are underrated. They undercharge horrifically.
Yep.
And I feel bad that they're always getting bullied by the insurance companies.
Yep. It's kind of a racket. They're forced to play a game, right?
Yeah.
Once you got people trained to game a system because the system's rigged against them.
Lose, lose.
Yeah, it seems like we should be talking about flat rate. Just
we can go there if you want to. I am against it anymore.
I guess I don't want to sound wishy-washy. It probably comes off wishy-washy, but it's the system like any other, but you have to have the system. Right. It can't be just this management tool to motivate your employees to produce more. If you're doing that, it breaks immediately. It's broken. And now if you have semi-intelligent people working for you, they are going to game the system to get the maximum amount of money.
Yeah. And that's a nice way of saying shortcuts.
Yes.
And half-assery. I don't know if we can say that word.
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah. The flat rate system. Now, I was a flat rate tech. I was a master Honda technician early on in my career. And the flat rate system was good to me. But in hindsight, I realized all of the things I didn't like that it had me doing, right?
Yeah.
Changing cabin filters that probably could have kept going, you know, fighting with my coworkers because he's doing gravy and I got the Diag, yeah. Right? I'm doing the warranty J35 V6 engine blocks and re-rings. And it said, whoa, I just want to keep doing gravy. I just want timing belts and R18 timing chains. That's all I want to do, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I was worried about my paycheck and that was it. I wasn't worried about being well-rounded. I wasn't worrying about helping my fellow coworkers. If anything, I would snicker when I saw him struggling because that would mean I would beat him. And the way that the shop was set up, they would give a bonus to people that got the top hours of the week, right?
Yep.
So you personally benefited from the other guy screwing up.
Yep.
Right? That's not
rooting against each other.
That is not a healthy environment. Shop culture with flat rate is divisive, to say the least. I am not a fan. I want you, any employee I've ever had has been hourly because I want you to worry about doing a good job and not your paycheck. Don't worry about your money. It'll be there.
And not because it was an episode of mine. I don't want to come off that way. It's just, I don't think I can say it enough. Look into the Cobra effect. Even if you don't believe the story behind it, where, you know, England is occupying India. And there is a cobra population issue in the town, the big cities or big city. I think it was New Delhi. I could be wrong. So the idea was I will pay for cobra tails. What the idea is you're going to be killing them. And it worked initially. The villagers or the people that live there, the residents went on a killing spree. They'd turn in the tails and they get the money. But then they're not idiots. They figured out we're being paid for cobra tails. Why go hunting these things? I'll raise them. So I'll raise them, cut off the tails, release them, or maybe kill them. But technically, the population goes up. So really all it is if anything, it's a thought experiment about the nature of motivation and or incentive.
Yes.
And flat rate falls into that. Just when you're put, if you're thinking about putting this into practice, think about what are you really motivating? What is the incentive? And then you have to either put the systems in place that make that less attractive so that the techs aren't growing their own, raising their own cobras to beat the system.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
There is definitely a place for incentive-based pay, performance-based pay, but the humanitarian factor is people need a predictable wage to live their life, right?
Yeah.
We can't worry, oh, well, marketing didn't do its job this week, so our bays are empty all next month because we didn't bring in that customer. We didn't do our jobs properly, so the techs suffer. And right, so now that's like they're looking for PDIs. They're looking for anything they can find. They're telling people they need breaks at 6:30 seconds and just breeds dishonesty. So I can understand a performance-based pay with a base pay, right?
Yep.
That's what we need, a good, solid, livable wage. And then you benefit from being good at your job, being efficient, right?
It would be interesting to see people talking more in like ratio to cost of living. So when basically you're asking me like, Matt, how much do you make? Well, I could give you a number. You know, I make 50 grand a year. You don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You know that where you live, 50 grand a year is you have to share a one bedroom apartment with somebody.
I say that all the time,
you know, but maybe where I live, that's doing all right. You know, maybe not living it up, but definitely I have a house and a car and all the things, or I make $100,000 and it's, you're killing it or still starving. It's almost like ratio to cost of living makes more sense, where if I make 2 times the cost of living, well, now you know that's doing all right. If you're broke, it's probably your fault. But if I make, you know, 0.8, 80% of the cost of living, it's like, oh man, come work for my shop. I'll pay you 1.2 times the cost of living.
Right. I have had conversations with newer shop owners that I've recommended to join some like shop owners groups on social media. And when they see the numbers that are talked about, their jaw is dropped. Their minds are blown. How are they paying people this much? How are they charging this much? And apart from running a business by the numbers and learning how to run an automotive facility properly, what no one considers is area, right? Like you nailed it. That geographic substance that says, hey, in New York, you need X amount of dollars just to barely survive.
Yep.
But in Arkansas, that number would mean you're killing it. You're doing fantastic. Yep. People don't consider where these shops are. You know, a West Coast shop paying out, you know, a high six-figure salary to a technician sounds like a dream. Meanwhile, that's a low middle class number to that gentleman in California based on his expenses.
Yep.
It scares people away. I can't pay this much for help. I can't do this. I can't do that. And they don't consider, you know, that's a good point based on people coming up with their own rates, right? Instead of following the calculation for determining what you need as an hourly rate based on your gross profit margin percentages, right? They're thinking, well, this is what John down the street charges. Yep. John might be a trust fund baby that doesn't need money. And he does this for fun, but you are the breadwinner for a family of four. You need to make money to live, right? So your profit margins need to be higher, but you're only basing it on this number you see, this hourly rate. It goes to show you that if you don't understand how the numbers work, you're going to bury yourself in a hole.
Yeah, there's just so much to that, right? The assumption is that Joe down the street is successful. Like they are making money. Or they've been at it for 30, 40 years. The building's paid for. They haven't upgraded equipment for 30, 40 years. And therefore, they just need less of that. You don't want to compete with that. And then it's basically figuring out what they don't do well. And then that's what you try to do well.
I get that.
Get your own slice of the pie that way.
That's kind of where me doing Keys came from, because independently, there's not a lot of people in that space. Yeah. We just have the dealerships, right? And the dealership pricing scared people. Going to the dealer in general scares people, and they'd rather not. I'm blessed to have people that want a personable relationship with their mechanic, right? That they go to, and it's nicer that way. So you're exactly right. I found something the market needed, something that my local competitor slash neighbors, no one is really my competitor in terms of I'm not competing with anyone else, right? I'm doing my thing.
Yep.
But you're right. I found something that the market needed and I ran with it.
Yep. I would say that's exactly our mindset. Exactly. I do not view them as competitors, and I don't view them as less than us.
Right.
It just feel like we're
different.
Right. There's just stuff that they do that we really don't. And there's stuff that obviously we do, they don't and don't want to. And that works out great. And if I can refer clients to them appropriately, I will. We do. You know, we got a stack of business cards by the service advisors to hand out. And it isn't always to the firing the customer. It's we're just not going to be your shop here.
It's providing a solution. You know that you can't offer it. So you're doing your job by helping them keep their car on the road.
Yeah.
I go into XYZ.
If you need exhaust bending, sorry. Mm-hmm. Here you go.
Yep.
Here's a shop that'll take care of
it. I have those relationships, right? It's like, I'm not going to remove broken exhaust manifold bolts, but Josh will.
Yep.
So I'm going to send you to Josh and make that referral. Josh knows he's going to do that job for you. And he's not going to push you to come to him only. He does the job that was asked of him. And really, it ends up to the customer's will, right? Yep. If they say, you know what, I like Josh more than I like Mike, well, then so be it. Apparently, Mike has some things he has to work on. So it is what it is.
Or at worst, that client or customer is thinking to themselves, I found two really good shops.
Right. Like, Mike's good at electrical. Josh is good with a torch. I got a guy for everything. Yeah. I got a guy. Right?
I trust them.
Yeah.
You know, like, I kind of like Josh's waiting room and Josh himself or the service advisor there or whatever. I like it there.
Yep.
But then, I don't know. Josh gave me this estimate I don't like. So I run over to Mike and his estimate's about the same. Or he looks over that estimate from Josh and goes like, no, he's treating you right. He's, look at that. He's doing this along with that. Like, he's doing the water pump with the timing belt. He's taking care of you. Oh, wow. Okay. And then maybe you win the job or they refer somebody else. And I don't know. It just seems to work itself out. I just don't know too many businesses that went out of business because they referred too many people away.
I agree. There's plenty of broken cars out there. We just, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. Let's get the customer squared away, even if it's not at our facility. Let's get them taken care of. Whatever that means.
What are some of the other like cool tools or programmers you have for keys? Like, what did you find you needed to get as you got more and more keys to do?
What really got me was OE. You know, just realizing that it was easier for me to do OE for a lot of keys than it was using the aftermarket tool.
Yeah.
Some of the aftermarket tools, you know, are more capable, but sometimes the OEM software just makes the process easier.
Yep.
And I was always wanting to not have the subscription for it, right? Or maybe I didn't price the sub in accordingly with the job. And it's one of those things where I decided, you know, this just makes it easier. Okay. Yeah. Let's just pull out the MDI. Let's get out whatever tool is required. Take the extra 5 minutes to set up this laptop because that job will go much quicker.
Yep.
It will go easier. Things will program more smoothly. So it wasn't exactly buying a new tool. It was picking the right tool, right? Instead of grabbing the red tool, grabbing the purple tool, grabbing, you know, the OE one that's been there the whole time sitting on the shelf, you know, in the partitions, it takes care of it. That's kind of what I did personally.
I had it mainly for the programming, but there's many times you end up going back to it for the keys. None so, like when you're talking about that, the car line that pops in my mind right away is freaking Volvo. Like, there are all kinds of means to add keys to a Volvo. Okay, not all kinds. Either do it OBD or EEPROM, but Vita, just boom, boom, done. And Vita isn't as bad to deal with as it used to be. It used to be a pain. Now it's not so bad. That's the big one that pops into my mind. And then lately, like GM, just doing it factory tool just seems to go better.
Yep, it does. Like a lot of security weights and stuff.
Yeah.
Ending with a failed process on an aftermarket tool. No, thank you. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, because after a couple of 12 minutes, you're now half an hour in. And then you have to go get another tool, which takes more time, and wait 10 minutes or 12 minutes, and then it works.
100%. So yeah, it's instead of, I love buying things, but I'm just going to utilize what I have properly. That's kind of what I've been switching to.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of board level work. I do whatever the IM tool can help me with. That's kind of as far as I go.
Yeah.
Right. And if there's anything further than that, I'd probably call PJ, but I just haven't come across that situation too much.
I've done it sometimes just because I wanted to see if I could do it.
So, that's the ego thing.
Right. I think those weren't the situations that would have been what made it reasonable for me to do it that way. So adding keys via EEPROM, of course, there's the romance of it, but there are situations where that becomes reasonable in that we're almost speaking, I think, almost 100% about European cars, and certain European cars, they have X amount of slots for key IDs. Like, it can have up to, just for a number, 8 keys learned to it. And once those slots are all used up, you can't add another key.
Right.
You'd have to replace the module with some, usually a fairly hefty cost. So there's a means to go in and basically delete or remove those keys from those slots and open them slots back up and then add keys back. That makes a lot of sense.
You can say third and fourth owner BMWs.
Yeah, I can. Say. I mean, those who know, know. But anyways, it was really like, can I do it? I have the tools, I have the equipment, I think I have the know-how. Let's see if I can do it. Even though the reality is, call up the BMW dealer with info, order the key. A few days later, the key shows up, or you go to the dealer and get the key, and you stick it in the slot, and it starts the car, and you drive away. that oftentimes ends up being not only the most reasonable, the most affordable, the most profitable for the shop. I did it that way to begin with, mainly to see if I could. And then the cloning stuff, that's becoming a thing where either the new module is cost prohibitive or non-existent.
Yep.
And therefore, I have to try to get this used salvage module to work with this car.
Yeah, it was born out of necessity pretty much.
That's where the EEPROM stuff has really started. It's more popular this year than ever before, but it's not a daily thing. And it's not a weekly thing. And maybe just by the sheer numbers, maybe right now it's a monthly thing or multiple times per month thing, but that's only this year. In years past, it's a rarity. You're really just bailing somebody out or our shop bailing itself out. But this year has been more of it than ever before. And I suspect it's just going to keep going up. Maybe not.
Now, those modules that you're doing, is that your customers or are people sending you modules?
Both. Yeah. Okay. I got to be careful how I answer that one. It is really, really rare that somebody like outside of my a certain radius of the shop will mail me a module like Tommy.
Right.
Tommy Oliva. That's part of SJ is module cloning or providing you a virginized module that's ready to plug in and program. Or maybe it's even cloning. It would be plug and play for the most part. I really don't try to get into that. I wouldn't have time. Yeah, I don't have time. And yeah, and also then I would have to invest in even more equipment, which I want to, but in my radius. So other shops sending me vehicles and or modules to try to get to work, that has gone up exponentially.
Sure.
Which again, use that word, it makes it sound like, oh wow, he's doing dozens of these. Well, I guess this year dozens, but in years past, no. So it's just going to be one of those things. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe all of a sudden we get flooded with new modules, reman modules that are a better alternative than cloning.
As vehicles stay on the road longer and parts become extinct, that business is just going to keep getting busier. So if you're kicking its butt now, it's just going to keep going.
It's mainly kicking my butt right now, but I have a couple of success stories. Some of it goes really good. Some of it's just it's an investment. The shop is making an investment in this being another, you know, revenue stream.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, because you guys don't want to say no.
Yeah, don't want to say no.
Don't want to say no. I say no. I say no. I stick to my strengths anymore. And when people want something that's outside of my comfort zone or my wheelhouse, I'll just recommend them elsewhere because I don't have the time for failure. So, you know, you were like, I just want to see if I can do it. Sometimes, like, I don't know when I took the time to figure out I could do it, but now I don't. Now I'm like, well, I'm not sure about that one. And my schedule's a month in advance at all times. Sorry, I just can't help you. At least not anytime soon. Or if you can leave it with me for a few weeks and I can play with it in my off time, it's a different story. But 99% of people can't just leave their vehicle with you to play with. So
is your shop just you?
Yeah. As of right now,
you're the man.
Man.
I mean, I knew you were the man the whole time, but I didn't know, like, you were just the only
as of right now. Yeah, it's me doing everything, and my wife works from home taking care of all of the back office and taxes, and she's the brains of the operation. I'm just the hands of it.
That's usually the case. That's my case too.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't do anything with the business mainly because it's not my business. It's none of my business.
None of my business.
None of my business.
I like my business. I love what I do every day. It doesn't feel like work, but as I've started to teach more, I'm realizing that I'm kind of leaning towards that now. So, like, one of the reasons that I'm here as not PSK Mike, but Rosedale Technical College Instructor Mike.
Is that the Rosedale College made famous by a certain
Scanner Danner?
Yeah.
Yes.
His first name really isn't Scanner, though. I have to
Scanner Danner is Dan. Have you ever heard that song? His son Caleb made a music video called Scanner Danner is Dan. It's fantastic. But yeah, Paul Danner, he was my instructor at Rosedale.
Really?
He was. So I...
Did you know he was who he is?
No, he wasn't him then.
He made what he does now for you.
Essentially, we were the class that he was building his field manual with, essentially. So it was one of those things where he's like, hey, I got this. You know, I'm working on it. It's in my new book. You know, and he was creating what we all love now is the, you know, his engine performance book. and the YouTube, he was doing all that, but we were the beginning phases. So some of the videos you may see online might have been a class that I was even sitting in, one of the older videos. But yeah, now I teach out of that same classroom.
Are you videoing it?
No, I do not video it. I made a quick jaunt at YouTubing a couple years ago, and I was right before YouTube changed their algorithm for payment. And I made like $72 the first year and then never made a dime again. So I kind
of... That's a dinner at Applebee's.
It is. It is dinner at Applebee's with drinks.
Oh, not lemonade.
No, Appletinis.
Yeah, Scrubs guy. Nice.
Me and Chris Martina, Appletinis.
Did you guys like that before Scrubs?
No, it was...
Or because of Scrubs?
Because of Scrubs.
Which one of you is JD?
I would say Martino.
Really?
Yeah.
I could see that.
He's a main character.
You're Turk. Type. You're the cool cat.
I am the cool cat. Thank you, sir. So Rosedale has been really good to me. And I've been there for a little over a year now. And I teach electrical and diagnostics. And what I found is that I really enjoy sharing my knowledge with people. And I like speaking in front of a classroom. And I have so much fulfillment from that light bulb moment, right? We've all had apprentices and things like that. And, you know, it's, we're happy whenever it clicks. And you know that feeling. It's the, wow, they finally understand the flow of electricity. They finally get how we measure amperage. They finally understand how their multimeter works. They actually went through that entire breadboard without fault. Like, I love that. It's a very proud moment for me because a lot of these students come in not even aware of lefty, loosey, righty, tighty. It's a different demographic now.
When you're teaching electricity, you guys, I don't mean to like advertise for the companies, but they have some pretty interesting teaching aids like Console Lab or ATEX, where they may have the breadboard or they have almost like miniature systems that they can use to test or build.
I believe we have an older Console Lab large breadboard.
Okay.
It's like a 4 foot long board with multiple systems, different circuit designs.
Nice.
Right? Just like my Isaac shirt here.
Right.
We have our series, parallel, et cetera. Right. And then they have the different test ports so they can go through the live circuit with their meters and solve the problems or, you know, whatever the case may be. Because it's easier to set up the circuit on the breadboard than it is in the car.
Yeah.
However, we always hit that point where the practical methods need to be seen in the car.
Yep.
And realizing that that short is not blatantly obvious in your face. It's under 3 feet of loom in an area that actually never got rubbed on, but somehow that wire still broke, you know?
Or somebody years ago decided they wanted to put a subwoofer in. And then when they sold the car, took the subwoofer out, but left the screw in.
Yeah. Or the Scotch lock.
Yeah. The Scotch lock. And the screw was into the harness, but somehow magically it didn't break any, insulation or didn't short anything out that couldn't be shorted together. And then over time, eventually started shorting and causing wicked problems.
Oh, yeah.
You're not far enough northeast to use wicked, though.
No, yeah. We don't use
wicked. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. But we have Pittsburghese. It's our own language. Have you ever heard of the Yinzer?
No.
Yeah, so I am a poor representation of Pittsburgh because I was always taught to suppress that accent. Because my dad would say, quote, it makes you sound dumb. Okay. So in Pittsburgh, we kind of have this accent where if you want to go downtown to see the Steelers play, right? And downtown Pittsburgh to watch the Steelers play football.
Yeah.
Right. Two totally different people just then. Right. Pretty much like, you know how they always put the worst people on the news to interview? Every Pittsburgher is the worst person you could interview on the news, essentially.
It's like that Jeff Foxworthy bit, right? It was pandelirium.
Exactly.
A tornado was coming, and all I could think was, I think I left my casserole dish over.
Oh, Jeff.
Ugh.
Good stuff.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, sir.
It's my pleasure.
I hope to have you on again.
Like I said, I'm full of things. Trauma, advice, whatever you need, I got
you. I would like to delve into that, actually. And I don't mean that pulling your leg or being... I'm not trying to be funny with that. I really would.
What do you think all this sarcasm is hiding, Matt?
What? I have a lot of sarcasm. I'm worried about what I'm hiding.
Anytime, sir.
We might have a breakthrough moment on the air.
Am I allowed to cry?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We encourage it.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I got you covered, man.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Mike Molesky of PSK Automotive and Rosedale College.
Thanks for having me.
No, thanks again for coming on. Thank you again for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Thank you to the Aftermarket Radio Network. Even Tracy's right here. It just seems so disingenuous to thank her. All right, I'll do it anyways. Thanks. She pressed the red button. It's a big deal. This is probably the last episode. Thank you again for listening. I went down with a knife in my back. All right. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.